You're listening to the Audio Nowcast live from NAMM, and now here's Mike.
Hey, welcome to the Audio Nowcast, and if it sounds like we're talking to you from a hotel room at NAMM on a Zoom, it's because we're talking to you from a hotel room at NAMM on a Zoom. Before we get going, let me introduce the guys that are with us, and there's a lot of them. So, over here, actually, I'm going to have the guys introduce themselves, starting with...
Me?
Yes.
Even though I'm not on Skype this time?
Yeah.
It would be me, Rob Arbatier.
Rob, good to see you.
Thank you. It's good to see you, Mike.
It would be me, Bobby Osinski. Not on Skype either.
It's me, Jordan Schertz.
Greg Undo.
Diego Stolko. Hi, guys.
Bobby Summerfield. Hello, darlings.
Andrew Carestes.
Mike Stitz.
Larry Dropa.
Larry Dropa from API. It's kind of like the boss is here.
It's good to state this from the very beginning. Okay?
And we're here from the... We're here at NAMM, and we all are here, and I just wanted to do a show from NAMM and just invite a bunch of guys. We've got a lot of different people here. We've got reps and manufacturers and techs, and let's just start right off the bat. How do you think the show's going, guys? Anything like the general vibe of the show? Bobby, you've walked around a lot. What do you get the sense of vibe of the show?
Big boots are now small boots.
Yeah, that's for sure.
So manufacturers that used to have big boots are now small. The one thing that surprised me was there's not as much iPad anything this time as I had expected. Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, from Larry, your booth at API, you've actually grown, though.
Well, I guess maybe we're one of the few people that's gone from a smaller booth to a bigger booth, but we've we increased our size this year after applying a number of times. We finally got a decent space.
And what do you think of how's the traffic been over at the API? The
traffic's been fabulous. I think it's kind of an indication of the overall, from what we hear anyway, you know, rebound of the economy and the music business especially. So it seems pretty healthy to us.
Now, Greg, you're here with Steinberg, but Steinberg's not here.
Yeah, we rolled out our Cubase 7 in early December, so it kind of came before NAMM, so we did kind of a dealer meeting beforehand, so we saw all of our dealers then, so we kind of opted to do that with product release cycles.
And then how does that feel, being, you know, free to walk the show?
Yeah, it's weird to walk the show, but now I have to, like, struggle and find parking, like, normally.
Greg definitely does have the world record for the guy who has been to the most NAMM shows without seeing more than one booth. Literally, he saw one booth the entire show.
Yeah. That's awesome. Hey, Diego, as someone who's walking around looking at gear, what do you think about the
I think
vibe?
The vibe this year is better than last year. I see more people. Overall, I didn't notice this thing about booths because I was talking a lot with people. There's a lot of products, a lot of interesting things that I noticed. So to me, it feels, you know, there's a good energy going on. I'm going to see more of it tomorrow.
Gotcha. And Jordan, as someone who's working with the API, why don't you tell them what you do over at API, by the way?
Okay, I'm a tech with the company. I do service stuff, installs, sales for trade shows and things like that.
And if you've been to an AES or a NAMM, Jordan's the guy who's usually demoing the 1608.
That's me.
And as someone who's talking to a lot of, on the other side, who's talking to a lot of customers, what's kind of been the vibe in your perspective?
You know, it's people walk in front of the 1608 and it's just like their jaw drops and they just take a big, deep breath, you know. With all these digital appliances and little gizmos, there's finally this still a big iron, well, or a small iron, old console, you know, that they can sit in front of and touch and feel and best of all hear. So.
And Bobby,
I think it's a great show, looking really good. One thing I would say I've noticed is the demise more of software people than anything else. There's all, like, the hardware people are here, or, you know, the guitars and the drums and things, but a lot less people showing off software stuff.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting how, as companies are dropping away and not showing, like, Spectrasonics and, like, Steinberg?
But there's a reason for that it's not really related to the market itself.
Right.
It's just the nature of how you can promote your instruments.
Right, but the space always gets filled. I mean,
there's 100 new exhibitors this time.
That's,
I'm curious,
that's amazing.
Because Bobby mentioned you saw less iPad-related stuff, because let's face it, the last NAMM or two, it was becoming the iPad show.
Yeah.
If you're seeing a lot less of that, have you noticed a trend of one thing more that you're seeing? Or
yes, more iOS for iPhone.
There's
a lot of iPhone accessories that
right.
you didn't see last year. Microphones, preamps, things like that. There's a lot that weren't here before.
You mean Apogee, they released something for
that? No, but even some small places, it was like that as well.
A lot of hardware for iPad and it seemed like there was a lot of... And incidentally, I overheard at lunch someone said that someone told them that I guess some official said that this was maybe a record-breaking attendance.
Scott said that.
Yeah, Scott said that, which I found I thought it was great news. Yeah.
He was drunk at the time.
by the way, Andrew, why don't you
unofficial data? Because
why don't you introduce yourself and explain what you do?
Oh, I'm the owner of a company called Audio Bro. We have a product that we released a few years ago called LA Scoring Strings. It's a high-end orchestral string sampling package. And we used to be exhibitors at the NAMM show, and we were for a few years. And we loved meeting our users, but like a lot of other software developers, we found that it just didn't coincide with our development cycle, and it was more of a distraction than a productive experience for us. So we miss meeting our users, but we still come and walk the halls for a day as opposed to preparing for a month before and then recouping a month afterwards.
Right, And you still get the benefit of doing the FaceTime because I'm sure you see a lot of your users.
Oh, yeah.
Out there. Absolutely. By the way, we forgot one person, Michael Bard.
I'm just a fly on the wall.
Once a part of the podcast, always a part of the podcast.
Yeah, Michael's been a guest several times.
And actually, you know, to be honest, we also forgot to introduce Andy Jackson, the voice of the Audio Now cast.
Who's by the way, that's the two people closest to the door, so they have the easy access, but they don't, but they get ignored a little bit. That's okay, it's fair.
And you don't hear them as well.
That's true, too.
But let's just dig right into it. Let's talk about the products that you've seen over at the NAMM show. I haven't seen a lot because I've been doing a lot of interviews, but I did. Diego did take me around, and we saw the MS-20, and then we saw the new...
The Sub Fatty.
And first of all, the MS-20... that is going to really frustrate a lot of people because they're not going to know how to use it, and they're going to start trying plugging in.
Should explain what it is.
Yeah, and the MS-20 is the micro little keyboard from Korg that emulated the old big MS-20, and it's a smaller version, and it's plastic keys, and it has patches on it, and there's no presets, and it's all manual. You know, you pick your waveform, your, you know, the oscillator and your LFO, and basically, you know, as soon as I put it on, I was listening to what the guy was demoing before me, and that poor guy, because all he was doing was going whee.
He's trying to see if the iPhone works.
Yeah.
He needs to modulate something.
That's right.
To the
extremes. And you're like, no matter what you do, all you hear is woo. So it's
looking
really
at Mike's face, and Mike's was like,
and you know, it's kind of a toy. I think it's like I said, I think it's going to frustrate a lot of people. But then we went over to the Moog. Why don't you tell about the Moog?
Well, the Moog is a real instrument. It feels like a real instrument. The knobs and everything has a real feeling. It's solid. Besides, you know, having a great name, a great legacy, but it's actually inspiring to play. I mean, on paper, if you look, MS-20, great, it's analog, Moog is analog, but then when you play them, there's a big difference. The Moog, to me, wins.
Right.
It's a real instrument. It's great. It really sounds massive. Yeah.
And we couldn't get it to go, whee!
No. But we made it scream a little bit. The lady from Moog looked at me like, it's okay now, you can go. So, all right.
What about you, Bobby? What have you seen?
I haven't seen that. I want to go down and check it out. It was packed, actually, when I went down there. So I was like, I didn't get close to that. I haven't seen anything really smoking. I am starting to see some hardware bits of gear. It's kind of nice for the API rack-style stuff. Useful. New bits of hardware coming out, people making nice, you know, compressors and things like that. So that's kind of exciting. Nothing really to blow my socks off, except for a lot more Chinese companies again. They're growing like mad, but their quality of their stuff's coming up. I found a great microphone, hopefully it's a great microphone company, but by spec and what they're saying they've got in the thing and looking at it, you know, obviously we'll have to have listened to it, but the cost of it was really relatively inexpensive compared to the equivalent stuff you get now. And it looks really, really killer. And I'm thinking, wow, that looks like where things could be going. If they get their manufacturing quality up, you know, and they stop getting the cheese factor like, you know, Japanese cars were in 1972, I think.
Right.
We're going to start to see some really good stuff from those, you know.
But you know what I heard? I talked to three different companies today that told me the same thing, that they stopped manufacturing in China. And they did so because there was a long lead time and they weren't getting it right. Whatever that they spec'd, it wasn't coming out right, and they've brought the manufacturing back. In one case, it went to Brazil. Mm. So that's kind of interesting.
I heard Poland was a
New Russia.
And Russia are hot spots for
ice cubes.
You know, the other thing that was interesting is that the Raven and the Mini Raven.
Oh, no.
Yes, I bring it up. Now, the Raven we talked about at AES, which is the Slate Digital Audio touch screen console controller. But now they have a small version of it for $3,500 that's supposedly shipping in November. March. So, I don't know. It's...
Is it related to the one we were talking two podcasts ago?
Yes.
It's a small version of it.
I have one word, you know, save yourself $3,000 iPad. That's it. You know? It's, yeah. We all know how I feel about the Raven.
Tell me what you think, Mike.
Did any of you get to play with the Prophet 12 yet?
A little bit I did.
How is it?
It sounds very nice. I mean, it's a whole different beast compared to the Moog. It's got a more polished sound. It feels like, I don't know, there's something a lot about the Moog that I like because it's totally analog, but it still feels contemporary, especially for film stuff that I'm thinking of. Mm-hmm. The Prophet 12, it's interesting, but there's some sort of, I don't know if there's reverbs or stuff going on.
It's just much more complex signal chain. So it's more like a polished...
Exactly. It feels like a nice machine.
I'll tell you one highlight of the show, by far, and I'm not just saying this because I helped put it together, is the Pro Tools rig over the API booth.
Really? Tell us about it.
No, actually, Mike, why don't you tell us about it?
Yeah, actually, it's really because there's such a move. So many guys have a laptop and sit on their bed and want to take over the world with a recording something. So it's a great little setup. It's using the Avid HDIO. And then hitting 10 channels of API Lunchbox with several of the different, the 560 and 550B and 550A and the 525 and 527 compressor. And then out of that, back into Pro Tools, and then summing those down to busing them to the 2500 bus compressor, which just sounds ridiculous. Yeah. And then out of that to the A2D, so and then using the converters because it has really great converters on it. And then that back into Pro Tools with the single AES cable. And boom, right out of Pro Tools to your speakers, and you can take over a small country.
And that's running off of the HD native Thunderbolt, which is surprisingly easy to get up and running. Mm-hmm. I mean, the most difficult thing is realizing that if you push the button in, you're going to mute the headphone output. But
I want to check that out actually, because I use API as the front end before I go to Pro Tools.
Yeah.
But I don't use it to go out from Pro Tools.
Oh, it's fantastic.
No, I'm actually in the process of thinking about changing the interface because I've heard some stuff that I want to check out. MyTech is one of them.
MyTech's excellent.
You know? MyTech is very good.
Very good.
Yeah, I've heard Eric Pershing actually was telling me about. Yeah. He told me that it's a great interface.
Is that the Jim Williams still version? Is that still... He did a version of that too, didn't he?
Did he? I didn't know.
Yeah,
I think he did
the analog electronics in that. He's got I think it's the same high slew rate video.
You know, I'll tell you one thing was interesting about the API setup too that Mike and I were talking about is that, you know, like in 10 or 20 years, laptops will probably be a hologram or who knows, and who knows what, you know, box it will be with Pro Tools or who knows what software, but. You know, like API, the preamp, all that stuff will still be sitting there, like ready to plug something in and sounding good.
Well, and the good thing too about the system, you know, is that it's not necessarily a Pro Tool system. You could be running any type of software.
Box,
you could be
running
Cubase, Nuendo, really anything. The best thing is just how you're getting in and out of both worlds, you know, with low latency and just going in, you know, tweaking your sound with. You know, whatever compressor or whatever EQ you want, and just coming back out, and then final stage, man, just add a little bit of that analog goodness, just a little bit of that oomph. I've been doing a lot of interviews with a lot of guys talking about API, and some of the best stories I've heard and the best tips are there's a couple guys that they just run the signal through the module. They don't even, like, they run it through a 525. They don't even, like, they barely slap it. I mean, they just, it might as well just be bypassed, and it just adds a little bit of smooth glue. It just smooths it out. And it really, it shows why, you know, as much digital as we have, as much of the software you have out there, it's like people like hardware, you know? Analog is still around, and it's really, really valid, and it's just really necessary for you to really define your sound.
It would, you know, there's a, this thing, it's obviously clear for people who came from the generation of recording studios. They have no doubt in understanding this concept. But for the younger generation, it's difficult because they want to do everything in the box. And they, first of all, it's not really difficult if you start introducing an external element like an API preamp. It's not killing you. It's actually making the whole sound better. But it's just the concept of doing everything in the box versus having external
things. If you think about it, exactly, it's a good point. I mean, if you in the old days, you'd have to get something to sound decent, patch it through a bunch of stuff, and take quite a while to get it going. I mean, if you try and say to a guy now that's doing it on their laptop or whatever, oh, that would actually sound better if you did it this way. He's like, yeah, really? I mean, this song's going to be in the radio before you've got the patch done.
No, that's true. But you know what? Larry, let me ask you, as a manufacturer, API, how hard is it for you to break in with the new generation of engineers that are out there? That there are some guys that literally have never touched a piece of analog. You know?
It's been a challenge. It's an educational process. It's something that we've had to work at a little bit because I think as an average, we're kind of a bunch of old guys at this point.
Talking for himself.
And so we've had to call upon some of the younger generation, some of the people who have a little more experience in the contemporary methods of recording and remixing and those kinds of things to get an idea of what it's all about and how to interface to the digital world, how to patch in some piece of analog EQ or an analog compressor into the chain, and to show people how it can sound. So it's an educational process for us too.
That's the key, because the moment they hear, they don't really have a. I mean, it's not like everybody has the budget to afford the expensive equipment, but there are controllers out there that are kind of pricey, and they buy them. It's just that they need to be shown, they need to hear these things to actually understand how good they are.
What
the difference they make.
You know? I've had at least, not exaggerating, 30 or 40 kids come up the last couple of days. You know, I'm in recording school, but so I've got the plugins, but you're saying that, like, if I use it, it's going to sound better? Like, I mean, it will? And I'm like, yeah.
It's like going on a bicycle or how do you call it?
I was just saying, this is a virtual studio. Look at what virtual means.
Yeah. I think there's also a lot of people doing, a lot more tracks. You know, I see people in Cubase Nuendo sessions, 200-300 tracks. So, and a lot of people will, send groups out to hardware processing. We have a lot of latency compensation. But sometimes it's also hard to incorporate that in the larger projects that are out now as well.
Hey, Greg, as long as you're talking, tell us a little bit about the Cubase that just came out.
So Cubase 7, one of the biggest new things we did is completely redesigned the whole mixer. So it's completely scalable, so it'll fit any screen resolution. If you're running a 1080p, resolution or a laptop, it's no problem. It also incorporated a channel strip. So every channel has a noise gate, three different compressors, envelope shaper for doing like transient designs, saturation for tube and tape saturation, as well as three different limiters. And you could drag and drop and rearrange the order of all of them without having to kind of have 12 different plugins open, close that channel, open up all the other plugins. So a lot of thought also with kind of visibility agents, so that you could actually say, I want, you know, like we see, I was at Hans Zimmer's place last month, and I think his opening template was 1,300 tracks. He's like, oh, I may only be using 400. So
wait.
Hide on you.
Template, 1,300 tracks.
Yeah. The composers like to have everything available, so they're not hunting for sounds.
Well, I'm hunting for tracks.
You guys incorporated hide unused tracks?
Yeah, so we can have hide unused tracks, or show me tracks that are only playing at this point in time in the song, and it automatically will filter out all the stuff that you don't want to see. So it's like if you had to kind of like redesign kind of like the best concepts of a software mixer, I think they did a really good job with it. And also integrating the control room, so all the cue mixes are handled, plus all your speaker switching and metering, so you have like CAT system metering,
right.
EBU scale, Nordic scale, loudness analysis, all integrated with the mixer. So it's been incredibly well received.
No, wait a second. We should probably say, wait, 1,300 tracks. Kids, don't try this at home.
1,300 tracks. Could you imagine? What if the guy putting the template together was like, man, if I just had one more track.
Greg.
Cowbell.
So where does that leave Nuendo?
We'll see Nuendo. Yeah, we've had kind of like Cubase first and then Nuendo come like almost sometimes up to a year later. We'll see Nuendo 6 with all these new features next month.
Wow.
So in February, so pretty close and pretty imminent.
And for anybody who really hasn't used Nuendo, and I'm an avid user, as you know, and I obviously use the other programs as well, if you're fed up with your sequencer, MIDI and audio editing, you should look at Nuendo and or Cubase.
And it sounds great, too.
It sounds brilliant, but even above that, just the way it works, the export features, it makes, respectfully, Logic look like a toy.
I can say this as a sample developer.
And Pro Tools, it's like, please, everybody uses it, but it's...
Yeah, the power of export renaming, as a sample developer, you have to chop something up into thousands and thousands of files. Yeah. I could not imagine doing anything else.
So what you're saying is that you shouldn't have a list over on the side that has every single
you track, absolutely should not
clip region all in a row. You should be able to put them in folders. Is that what you're saying?
Not only that, but you should be able to rename them if you like.
Batch rename and back export. It's just ridiculous.
And find them and
like a batch rename. You mean
it's got batch? Yeah. It's got a lot of things. Batch export.
Right?
Greg. So another
not
question.
Only batch rename, but intelligent. You can have it
with different extensions.
Prefix, suffix, this, that, date, whatever, name of the track.
Hey, but in Pro Tools you can change the color of the mixer. That's right. I mean, there's certain colors, okay? I don't have the full
Nuendo
spectrum of colors.
In Nuendo you can write a macro for that.
So, Greg, the question about the channel strip then in Cubase, you say that there's a lot of processors there. Mm-hmm. Are they always in the signal path?
No. Not unless you turn them on. And you can turn on each of the elements. You can say, it kind of starts off with gate compression, and you say, okay, I want to compress it before you just drag and drop it up. And you can even change the EQ position, because it usually comes after the inserts, before channel strip. But you could also say, I want the EQ position here, and totally change the signal flow of that, kind of at will.
Actually, adding on to what Bobby was asking, when a signal... When you have a track that has EQ compressor and it's on, but it's not receiving signal,
that doesn't take additional processing.
It's not,
it's part of the VST3 spec.
That's very nice.
Wow.
And the processing is really good. It's David Kahn called me up. You know, he's a pretty avid Cubase user. And he's just like, you know, he's like, I'm really starting not to use any third party stuff. I'm doing a lot. You know, the channel strip's just there all the time. It's on. It's kind of how I want to work. And, you know, not having to open up, you know, and juggle plug-in interface windows.
But that's how you can get 1,300 tracks.
Yeah.
Because if you're not using it, it's not...
Exactly. So it's not processing, it's not taking... Well, it's not processing audio, it's not taking your CPU.
So what you're saying is if you add a plug-in, it doesn't have to eat up
there's no CPU load when it's not used.
Unlike other programs that we made.
We figured it was the right thing to do.
That's awesome. Well, hey, getting back to NAMM, I want to go around and tell me, and I'll ask each one of you guys, the one thing that you like about NAMM and the one thing that you don't like about NAMM. Let's start with you, Michael.
Well, I used to go to NAMM every year, and I haven't been. This is my first NAMM in about 10 years. And what I like about NAMM is that it's so music-oriented, and you actually see, I'm a saxophone player, so you actually see real instruments, and people playing real instruments, and you really get the notion that, that music is still alive. What I don't understand about NAMM is, what is everybody doing here? Everybody I go talk to that I know, you know, all the companies, I say, well, oh, this is great, so are you doing any business here? Hmm. No, we don't do any business at NAMM. Why are you here? You know, why? So that's the thing I don't get.
Rob, what about you? One thing you like, one thing you don't like?
The one thing I like, I guess, is that it's sort of an accelerated way to learn about what's going on in the industry, because I know just over the years I've met so many people, and I have a giant circle of friends, it seems, who are revolving around NAMM or who show up at NAMM, and just by talking to that network of friends, it's easy to sort of avoid a whole bunch of trips to stores and random searches on the internet. You can sort of find out what the cool new trends are, you know, what the cool companies are at any given moment. I just like it because it's a quick, easy way to really find out what's going on. The thing, I mean, I've only been here for half the day so far, but the thing I don't like about NAMM, it seems like the whole Anaheim Convention Center is becoming a bit of a mess. Like, all the streets have all been rerouted, the parking's bizarre, the access is bizarre, there's very strict security that seems to be strict about something they're not sure what they're being strict about. It's just very confusing, and I understand they've tried to make it where access to the halls once you're inside is easier, but the whole thing is getting sort of a
TSA
cluster
vibe.
Fun kind of vibe to it.
TSA vibe.
It is. It's getting a little.
I got patted down several times.
Yeah. And that was.
Did you like it before the show?
That was in the bathroom.
It was in the guitar section.
I was at Denny's.
Bobby, how about you? One thing you like, one thing you don't like.
The networking I love, but all trade shows are the same. I come for the people rather than for and friends that I don't see any other place. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the brilliance of it. When I come to a show, I don't necessarily look for products. I look for trends. I look around and I want to see kind of what's going on as an industry, where it's going. So again, when we talked about before the iPad,
right?
You know, there was a trend. Everybody was doing iPad apps and iPad hardware and everything, and I don't see that this year. What I don't like about NAMM, I have to say, it's probably the same thing. It's the hassle of getting here. It's the hassle of parking. It's the hassle of you know, getting anywhere in the halls. It's just not easy. There's kind of an overload of people. It's hard to believe, but the convention center is overloaded.
Yeah, yeah. I totally agree. Jordan?
Well, you know, I was going to kind of echo some things that have been said before, but I won't anymore because it's already been echoed upon echo. You know, my favorite thing is, again, the people. What we mentioned earlier, that attendance is higher than ever. I heard roughly over 100,000 people or something like wow. that, and that's just, it is insane to think about. And
they all go through the door at the exact same time.
At the same time. And then my least favorite thing is all the people. No, the not enough time in a day. There's so much to see, you know. Mm-hmm. You could just spend all day in the place just wandering around, you know, and you almost at some point you got to pick or choose, and then when you leave you wonder what you missed out on. You know?
Yeah.
Just
you
in the basement alone.
That's right, just in the basement.
I'm going to propose they should come up with something that you can say to people, like when you're really happy to see them, you're glad to be able to catch up for a minute, but you have to keep moving or you're going to miss out on much time. And you should be able to just say, like, code 12. And then they realize, look, I'm happy to see you. I need to drop you like a bad habit right now because I got other places to be. Don't take it personally. I still love you, but goodbye.
Well, we can start it right here.
Code 12.
Code 12 means see ya.
Greg,
but in a good way.
How about you?
Obviously, seeing friends from all over the world in one place is great. And, you know, when I left D.C. the other day, it was 9 degrees or like yesterday, so that's a nice change. Working the booth as a manufacturer, it's always the, you know, 2 or 3 days of setting up before that was always a drag that a lot of people don't see. You kind of walk in the booth, is there, you know, and all the booths are set up, but... So we're not exhibiting this year, but so I don't miss that aspect. But that's always kind of at the end of the show. It feels like the last day of school. Tore down.
Larry, is the API booth just a spring-loaded single button you push and the whole thing just
blows on itself?
Assembles itself. Beautiful booth this year.
Diego.
Well, the thing I like about talking with people at the NAMM show and in case of the people that demonstrate the product is that I can get a sense of what's going on besides words, and this is not something you can get from reading reviews. Because if you're looking at a product and the guy is trying to explain you that you can do things, but I can't really show you how, you understand that there's something else. Otherwise, when the product is really well done, there really isn't much to say because it's there.
Right.
It's working, it sounds good and everything.
There's so many products like that, too, where you go and you have to scratch your head.
Exactly, I mean, not really be, you know, but the thing with the MS-20, I read the reviews on Synthopia, and there was a huge excitement. People are freaking out. Oh, my God, I'm going to buy three of these. Yeah. Sure. Did you try it?
You're not going to buy three.
You go try it, and then you tell me if you still want to buy that thing. And you try something else, obviously, to make a comparison. What I don't like is the time always seems not to be enough, and by the end of the day, my legs are just exploding.
You need segments.
Like fragments of wood.
Bobby, how about you?
What I like about, always like about NAMM is the rock and roll girlies. I mean, yeah, that's nice seeing my buddies. And exactly like Rob, the first day I'm here, I've got a mission. I want to go and see a couple of things. I get a snake tail around the place. And if I see something I haven't seen for like normally like 6 or 8 months, I avoid them on purpose. I don't see them, walk right past them, because I know there will be a 25-minute catch-up and a beer, so I don't do that. But I normally go back and say hi to them later. So that's one thing. What I dislike about NAMM's this year's too, and every year, it's supposed to be technology center, right? My iPhone and most cell phone service sucks, and they haven't got free broadband. I mean, guys, we're in 2013. Yeah. Anaheim is super in the dark ages. So that's my
here. Yeah.
So put babes and internet. There you go. That's mine.
Just put one more cell phone. Andrew, how about you?
You know, that's a good question. What I like most about NAMM is just on an existential level, is just the creativity and that you sometimes see exhibited in a NAMM show. There are some amazing things that just. We're all there for the same reason. We're all into the music industry, and there are some really, really cool things. That said, what bummed me out a little bit this year is I didn't see as many really, really cool things that really inspired me this year. But I still love the energy and just coming out with, you know, the creative stuff. And pretty much echoing what everybody else doesn't like. You know, the venue is stifling, and the lack of digital access I like the energy. Also, one thing I don't like is that there are fewer software developers, and I'm one of them myself, so I'm guilty. But there you go.
How about you, Mike?
I would say on the positive side, definitely the relationship thing. I mean, it's always great to see a new piece of gear you're reading about, whatever, and get to check it out. Rarely are microphones plugged in, which I always found very interesting. You know, but and you get yelled at by a few vendors who, you know, think you should already know what they have and shouldn't ask any questions about it. But no, it's just because, you know, whatever you do for a living, the relationships are like the most important thing. It's just, you know, getting to see friends and hanging out, that's like the quality time, you know. And on the negative side, I would probably say, like, as you move from Hall A, as you head towards like C, D, E, like the clothes get darker, like the bathing is less frequent. the hair definitely gets blacker, and the jeans definitely get skinnier, you know. And that's a little weird. It gets a little more crowded. You're more apt to be, you know, stabbed by a pointed guitar, you know. But you kinda, but other than that, you know, it definitely, the cell phone thing is actually, I didn't realize that was going to be as annoying as it is. But, you know, it's not that big of a deal, but it is a little bit annoying. So.
Agreed.
Larry, how about you, sir?
Well, I would say positives are the ability to connect with the customer, the end user, in a lot of situations. From a manufacturer standpoint, that's pretty important. And we find a lot of people who come to the API booth in particular haven't had their hands on some API gear in the past. So it's an opportunity to do a mix on a console, for example, that you don't have to pay an hourly rate for. And so it gives people that contact and connection with our customers. The negative side is that it doesn't, because I'm confined to the booth for pretty much the total 4 days of the show, I don't have as much of an opportunity to see what other manufacturers are doing or what their new products are, the new technologies are. So the negative part is that I don't get to go around very very far from the, from home base, as it were, and see what else is out there.
How about you, Mike?
Okay, the things I like about NAMM have all been said. No, but, you know, really, the podcast was born out of the NAMM show. And it was, you know, we've told the story before, but, you know, Rob, myself, Larry, we used to always get together after every NAMM and go out to dinner and had a vibe that's really similar to what you're listening to right now, where it's just a bunch of people. All we need are basically food and drinks, and this is what, you know, basically the start
Los
of
Angeles
the...
Los Angeles executive.
This is the start of the podcast, because, you know, when you go to the NAMM show, and if you have any friends that go, it's not like you've enjoyed the show. It's more like you survived the show, you know. And so you're telling these war stories like you've just been through a battle, and it's really great. And that it's really fun. And I'm hoping on this podcast that we're kind of capturing a little bit about that. The thing I don't like about the NAMM show, besides the obvious, the crowds and the just how ridiculous they've changed this Anaheim Convention Center. You know?
It's bizarre, isn't it?
It's ridiculous. There's places where there's sidewalks that they're funneling you to a place that just dead ends. Like behind the stage.
Yeah.
If you go to the stage, you can't get out.
You die there.
I actually thought I was looking at it wrong.
Yeah.
I
mean,
I'll tell you one very quick story that happened today. I had to have, because of another project I'm working on, I needed to have 3 MacBook Pros with me today,
right,
which I have in a bag that has wheels, and it's just like a little suitcase that has wheels. And Michael and I were walking into the show, and I'm walking in with this bag, and I have an artist badge, which means you can bring gear in and out. Right. And so I walk up to security, and they say, you can't bring a bag in with wheels. And I said, but I have the artist badge. They said, only an exhibitor can bring in a bag with wheels. So I said to Michael, there is a way around this. So you know what I did? I picked up the bag and put it over my shoulder and went to the next entrance, and they were fine with it. So that's how great the security is here. So you have to remember to pick up your bag with wheels, otherwise you're a terrorist.
I think the worst thing about NAMM is the lack of respect for people's ears. I mean, really, some places are just so loud, and that some of the
for no reason.
Yeah,
but they do have the sound police.
No, they do, yes. Which is, but you know, you go down to, as Mike was saying, you go start going down towards, you know, Rock and Roll Ranch, you know, that's where you hit, you know, Hall B, C, and D, that direction. It just
well, you have people playing drums, like, using electric guitars as drumsticks. The loudest thing you can imagine, like, stacks of Marshalls. Yeah. It's painful.
So, well, anyhow, this has been great. We're not going to go on too much longer because I'm tired.
And there's no food.
I know. There's no food for Bob. But this has been really fun. But before we go, really quick, we actually have an opportunity to talk to a rare breed of person, and that's the NAMM newbie. And that's Andy.
This is Andy's first time.
This is my first NAMM.
What do you think, Andy, your first NAMM?
I'm overwhelmed. I cannot believe how many people are here. They are calling for over 100,000 people, but I think what's encouraging for me from the radio side of things is I love seeing everybody coming together, the creative side of who's making great music. So it's exciting for me to see young people here, meeting some people that they've always wanted to meet, probably checking out the gear, the younger people at the API booth wanting to understand how it all works and looking to the future of what that's going to turn into of creative and hit music is what I love to do. That's exciting. The negative side of it is, the lines are incredibly long. The Starbucks line is like crazy. It took like an hour to get food. It was just kind of crazy. So a little overwhelming there, but it's exciting to be here. I'm excited to see everybody.
Have you gotten to see the lines yet for people lining up to get autographs?
Yes.
And I swear, you could go to people in that line, and it could be like around the block, and you say to somebody, what are you in line for? And they're like, I don't know. Like, everybody else was in line, so I thought I should get in line. There was a line for the taco stand that looked like it was about an hour.
That's the line that we were in.
But have you had those tacos, though?
They must be some
pretty good. We decided to skip one.
Yeah. Crazy.
All right, gang. Well, hey, listen, I hope you enjoyed the NAMM show podcast that we're doing. This is day 2. We still have 2 more days, so, you know, we'll see what happens. You know, if you want to find out about the NAMM and all the different projects, you know, there's plenty of websites that you can go to see what the latest and greatest. We just wanted to spotlight a few. But from myself and all the guys, thanks for listening, and we'll catch you on our next regular podcast.
Woo! Woo!
Yeah.
And I'll be back on Skype.
Thanks for listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by API. The Audio Nowcast is hosted by Mike Rodriguez. We'll see you next time.